Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for holding and welcome to the 2021 semi-annual results of Fagron. At this moment, all participants are in listen-only mode, and later we will conduct a question and answer session. I would like to hand over the conference to Fagron. Go ahead, please.
Hello, and welcome to Fagron's first half of 2021 conference call. Today, Rafael Padilla, CEO, Karen de Jong, CFO, and Andrew Polydo, President of Fagron North America, will guide you through the results for the first half of 2021. We will refer to a presentation that can be downloaded at our website, investors.fagron.com. There will be an opportunity to ask questions after the presentation. I will now hand over to Rafael. He will start on slide three of the presentation.
Thank you very much, Constantijn. Good morning, all. Constantijn, congratulations with your new appointment as Area Leader EMEA. For sure, you're going to do a very good job. It's very good that today also we have our colleague, Andy Polydo. Please feel free to ask a lot of questions regarding the growth propeller of Fagron the upcoming years. Andy, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
When we move to the first slide of the presentation, the first semester highlights financially, our sales decreased 0.8% to 276.6 million euro. That is a growth of 5.9% on constant exchange rates. Our gross margin decreased 140 basis points to 58.4% due to, as we indicated today in the press release, temporary COVID-related impact. We will elaborate later on. Our EBITDA decreased 11% to 56 million. Our operating cash flow increased 15.1% to 31.3 million euro. Our net financial debt EBITDA ratio was 2.18 at 30th of June 2021. The outlook for 2021, we foresee further growth in sales with a EBITDA margin between 118 million and 124 million euro. When we move to the next slide.
Yeah. One of the key highlights in the first half of 2021 was the acceleration of our sales growth at Wichita, at our Fagron Sterile Services businesses. Towards the end of the second quarter, we realized a run rate of roughly 70 million annualized. That can be attributed to the launch of 15 new SKUs, primarily focused on our IV bags, which we see a tremendous opportunity. We also invested in our headcount with the addition of a second shift, so roughly 60 new FTEs, in order to prepare for more accelerated growth. We also announced this morning the acquisition of the activities of US Compounding. Based on the factors that we saw in the first half of the year, the onboarding of roughly 400 new accounts, and then the acceleration of our new product development pipeline, where we added 15 new SKUs, we are confident in the stated target from 100 million-18 million, plus the activities of US Compounding to create a $125 million run rate in 2022.
Thank you, Andy. We stay in the operational highlights of the year. As we have indicated many times, we started the movement of our production activities in the GMP repackaging of raw materials in our new facility in Poland. You can see here the pictures of the warehouse, the lab, and the front door. We started them, as we said, as we indicated, the middle of this year. The first products are now, as we speak, coming out of the new factory, and we're going to see a structural annual contribution margin of 2 million as from 2022. As well, we're very proud to share with you that we have completed the construction of a new lab in Israel. You know the acquisition of Pharma-Tamar last year. The Israeli market is very attractive for us as we offer a full service to the industry there. We sell the raw materials, the brands, the compounding services, not sterile and sterile. We invested in this attractive market in Israel. Also, as we have indicated today, this morning in the press release, we have here indicated that our management structure has been reshaped a bit in order to have more efficiency in the decision-taking process. We have, of course, next to the CEO and the CFO, indicated a person for M&A activities, that is Johan Verlinden, our colleague Johan Verlinden, and next to the three of us, Andy, North America, Ivan, Latin America, and Constantine, EMEA, you can see a diversified colleagues in terms of nationalities and also with a lot of experience, as you can see in the years being in the company.
Good morning, everybody. The next slides will explain the H1 2021 results per region. The first slide represents the geographical breakdown of the sales of Fagron. EMEA is the biggest region of Fagron with 128.9 million of sales and shows growth of 6.3% including acquisitions. North America increased sales by 2.7% to 82.3 million, which was an increase of 12.3% against constant exchange rates. Finally, Latin America increased sales by 7.2% to 65.4 million euros or 25.2% against constant exchange rates.
Thank you very much, Karin. When we move now into EMEA, we can see the sales decrease of 6.3% organically at 10%. Of course, what we indicated, we have seen lockdowns in different countries in the European region and other restrictive COVID-19 related measures, and this impacted the demand of our essentials segment and the non-sterile compounding. We will see in the third bullet, of course, that we see a nice development in the compounding services that decreased only 3.9% during the second quarter compared to the decline of 18.8%. Of course, we'll see in the next slide the recovery of the first issued prescriptions, right, in the Dutch market. So that's very positive for us because the funnel is now being filled, and as we also explained last time, out of 100 new prescriptions, or 100 prescriptions, sorry, 20 come from the first new and 80 from repetition. When we go then into the further explanation of the sales in EMEA, we can see that the demand of specific COVID-19 items was absent during the first 6 months of the year. And of course, again, we have seen the sterile compounding and the brands were performing strongly. Our EBITDA was down 14.4% to 28.6 million, decreased of 210 basic points. As we also indicated, that's a temporary impact on the gross margin due to COVID-19 related issues in the supply chain, and of course, a temporary increase in cost related to the new factory in Poland that we saw. In the next slide, of course, we see the scripts that we said indicated in the second bullet on the sales. Then we go to Latin America. In Latin America, we continue our strong performance. The number of doctors' visits and prescriptions increase again in the first semester of 2021. We strengthened our leadership with good sales growth in the brands and essentials. Our activities in Colombia, compounding service activities, grew 52.1% at constant exchange rates, and our EBITDA was up 1.9% to 13 million. The margin dropped 100 basic points, and here we see again impact on the supply chain issues. As an example that we have spoken, we see, for example, a container that normally costs $800 to bring from Far East to São Paulo, and it was increased during this first half for 10 times. Then we move into the next slide, North America.
Yep. Moving into North America, you saw an increase in the first half of this year versus same period last year of 12.3% in constant exchange rate, 2.7% in euro. When you look at the underlying data, you saw a 2.7% decline in constant exchange rate in our brands and essentials business. This was primarily related to demand for our COVID-19 related products almost absent this year versus prior periods, albeit the underlying business is very, very strong. When we moved to our compounding services businesses, particularly for Grand Sterile Services, we saw very exciting developments in the first half of this year. We were up 32.3% on a constant exchange rate. When you look at quarter two of last year, We were more or less on a run rate of $3.2 million per month. When we wrapped up quarter two this year, we're on a run rate of $70 million. And so very exciting developments. This can be attributed to a launch of new SKUs, as well as rolling out our IV bags, which we have large expectations for. That, in combination with the acquisition of the assets of USC, we've raised our target to $125 million for 2022 run rate for FSS. At our Anazao business, we saw a 16.8% increase in constant exchange rate, due largely to favorable industry dynamics as well as clinics reopening in the second quarter of 2021. Moving down to our EBITDA, we were down 14.1% year over year, so we did 14.4 million euros. This is primarily related to two factors, the first one being an impact on our gross margin due to COVID-19 related issues and our supply chain, so mostly increased cost of goods and increased transportation cost, as Rafa mentioned, that we've seen in other regions. Traditionally, we have been, or historically, we've been very successful in being able to pass these temporary price increases on to our customers, so we are monitoring that situation very closely. Secondly, we made a strategic investment in our FSS business to increase another shift in order to prepare for our accelerated growth in the second half of this year in 2022. So we added 60 new FTEs. And so by doing this, we feel like we're very well positioned and are very confident to hit the guidance that we've given for the $125 million. We also are confident in our ability as we continue to grow the business to bring EBITDA margin structurally to 20% as we stated below in 2020, or as we stated before in 2022.
Thank you, Andy.
Moving to the next slide. The next slide will summarize the financial results of the first semester of 2021. So the first slide represents the turnover development in the different regions for the first semester. Sales decreased slightly from 278.8 million last year to 276.6 million at the end of the first semester. EMEA shows a decrease of 10%. We see compounding services in EMEA recovering compared to the first quarter of 2021. Elective care is starting up again in our main markets and the number of prescriptions are increasing. However, this is compensated by a drop in essential sales because of decreased demand for COVID-related products. Latin America shows a growth of 25% driven by a combination of price and volume increases. The US sales increased by 12.3% or 8.8 million. The essential business increased by 16% while the brand decreased by 23.1% as a result of COVID-related sales decreasing. Sterile services increased by 23.7%. There's a negative FX impact because of weakening of the Brazilian real and the US dollar of 18.6 million. On top, there is 6 million of acquisition growth, mainly because of the acquisition of Tamar, resulting in a total sales of 276.6 million euros. Moving to the next slide, the gross margin shows a decrease of 114 base points to 58.4% compared to last year. The main reasons for the decline is the impact we have from various COVID-related developments resulting in limited availability of products and higher costs. We estimate the impact roughly around 1%. The operating costs, excluding subscription rights, increased slightly by 0.7%, resulting in a EBITDA of 56 million euro, a decrease of 11%. Moving to the next slide. The non-recurring costs are 0.7 million, which are mainly related to the restructuring costs we had in EMEA and a release of a contingent liability in Latin America. EBITDA decreased to 55.3 million euros. Depreciation and amortization also decreased to 14.6 million euros. Going to the next slide, the financial result decreased by 15% to 6.1 million euro. In April of 2021, we repaid 60 million US dollars of outstanding notes, which resulted in a decrease of the interest cost of Fagron. The effective tax rate is 22.2% and the cash tax rate is 27.4%. The reasons for the increased cash tax rate is a combination of decreased profitability and timing of payments. This all results in a net profit of 26.9 million, a decrease of 14.6%.
Thank you very much, Karin. So to finalize this presentation, what can we expect for 2021? We can expect further growth in sales with a EBITDA of between 118 and 124 million euro. We also, and this is a job that we did the last 9 months, we streamlined the EMEA region with the back office, with the facility in Poland, but also rationalization of our front office activities in important markets like the Netherlands. And now Constantine can take it over and, of course, can make it a big success out of it. We are going to leverage, as Andy said, customers, 400 new accounts and SKUs, total on track for 2022, 180-200 new SKUs. Now we're going to launch also Epidural, right, Andy? Correct. Also, we are working on a strong R&D pipeline with products in our brands and essentials aimed at prevention. Our sterile compounds, we are the global consolidator of the sterile market worldwide with activities in 6 countries. And of course, the global platform of Fagron Genomics that are an enabler of our brands and essentials business, totally aligned with personalizing medicine. And as we saw today, with acquisition of the book of business of US compounding, an active and disciplined acquisition strategy focused at EMEA and North America, and with also, as we stated within the team, a dedicated colleague in order to execute this strategy. And now we open the time for questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will start the question and answer session now. To be registered for the question and answer queue, please press star 1. If you have a question, please press star 1. Go ahead, please. The first question is from Mr. Frank Laassen, Degroof Petercam. Go ahead, please, sir.
Yes, good morning, all. First question on the impact on the gross margin of the COVID-related raw material increases and the transportation cost. How quickly do you think the situation can normalize, and what are you doing? Can you, for instance, quantify the price increases? Are you opening up, breaking up existing contracts? So could you elaborate, how you think the situation will evolve going forward?
Yeah, thank you, Frank, for the question. Yeah, indeed, we see a decrease of our margins. We believed initially we would see recovery this semester. However, we saw a rapid rise in the price of certain raw materials and packaging, partly as a result of COVID-19 and the global vaccination programs. We see transportation costs risen substantially, and under current contracts, these cost increases cannot always be passed on in full or only with a delay, resulting in a temporary negative impact on our gross margin. As said, we believe it's a temporary impact. We believe we can pass price increases towards our customers and can come back to levels pre-COVID, so that's around 60%. However, we do not know how the new developments regarding COVID and especially the outbreak of the Delta variant can impact us, so it's difficult to provide an indication on timing. That said, we are positive that by the end of the year, we would see recovery in the margins again.
Okay, and could you also quantify the price increases you have to pass on? Is that quantifiable?
Yeah, that differs a little bit per market. So, you know, Brazil is pretty dynamic, so we can pass part of the price increases a bit easier, although we do see that with the huge increases in Brazil, that we are not able to pass it all at this moment. So when we see the growth in Brazil, it's a combination of price and volume. Price double digits, so a little bit over 10% is price driven. Yeah, we see price increases way over that. So at that point in time, it's for us difficult to increase even more in that already very dynamic market. Other markets are a bit more easier, but for instance in Europe, we have contracts that are running, so it's not that easy to immediately increase prices, but over time we are positive that we can increase those prices.
Okay. And then you helped us on the gross margin, the impact, but there were also some extra costs in the first half for the packaging facility and also for Wichita. Could you roughly indicate how much additional costs you've added because of these two reasons?
Yeah, no, so we indicated indeed that the OPEX remains stable, around 103 million compared to last year. And we see indeed that on the one side, the increased costs are in US compounding part to accelerate that growth. You also see that in the EBITDA margin of the US. We see an increase in Poland. We also believe that's temporary because we are transferring products from the Netherlands to Poland. So there are double costs in that process. So we believe that's a temporary impact. And of course, we see on an absolute amount also an increase because of the acquisitions. Those costs are being compensated by saving. We realized that. We mentioned last year that we had a reorganization. So that's compensate partly of the OPEX we invest in the business. And this is the level of detail we want to give, Frank.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you very much.
The next question is from Mr. Matthias Meinhardt, Kepler. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hi. Good morning. Two questions from my end. First one is on the guidance. You have a guidance bracket to arrive at full year adjusted EBITDA between 118 and 124 million. I'm just willing to try to understand a little bit better what's going to be the swing factor for Fagron arriving either respectively at the low end or at the high end of that guidance, and maybe also some more color per region on what to expect. And then second question is actually on the strategic investments done in the Wichita facility. So a second shift, I was just wondering, next to this initiation of a second shift, what is still needed to get to full capacity of the facility, and can we just, can you confirm actually that with these investments and there's the potential to do more than $125 million, and how much more? That's my second question.
Yeah, thank you very much, Matthias, and good morning. Regarding the range that we gave today and how do we see the shift, what we see is that our fundamentals remain strong or even stronger during this pandemic we have seen, and we also see improvements in, again, two strategic elements. What we said in the presentation, that's one, the farming service activities in Europe, that is mainly the Netherlands, that we see a positive trend. We're coming from minus 18.8 to minus 3.9, so that's a good positive trend aligned with the issued prescriptions. So that's one element. The second one, of course, the ramp-up on our Wichita facility in the U.S., as we said, the propeller for our growth. Of course, Q1 sales were somehow weak, but improvements in the second quarter, more toward the ends, at the end of the second quarter. So that's another element. Of course, what we have said today, we have seen some margin erosion during this first semester due to the COVID-related situation in the supply chain. Also with the new Wichita 60 FTAs that you're going to elaborate now, Andy, and the movement of the Polish facility. So all these elements give us confidence in order to give the range of 118-124, right? So then moving to the regions, what we see in LATAM, as we indicated, we see continuous strong growth there. Of course, with the pricing that we monitor on a daily basis with this dynamic of the markets, we will also continue passing through this price increase that we have seen in the supply chain to our customers, and there we are very well positioned because also we made the step of building some strategical inventories there in order to stay as we are very much competitive in the US. Of course, Andy, you will elaborate how the margin will evolve in the second semester, but we are very confident. And in the MEA region, of course, with the project that we have done the last 9 months on streamlining the organization, on centralizing the back office on the operational side, on having this delay of price increase in some of the contracts, we are also very confident that we'll see also an improvement there. Andy, maybe you can tackle the second question on Wichita.
Yeah, so on the question, the second question on Wichita about full capacity and the 60 new FTEs, of course, we took the decision to make a strategic investment in 60 new full-time hires for the operation to create the second shift. When you looked at our business last year, on a monthly basis in the second quarter, we were a little over $3.2 million per month. Of course, now as we wrapped up the second quarter of this year, we were around $5.8 million per month. You look at the acceleration of the new product development pipeline and the onboarding of roughly 400 new accounts, which take more or less around 4 to 6 months to fully onboard, especially for the larger hospital systems. So that gives us a lot of confidence that adding these 60 new FTEs is the right decision in order to continue the accelerated growth in the second half of this year as well as in 2022. As it relates to capacity, I think more or less we should have sufficient capacity in the facility up to around $200 million or so, which we've previously communicated in the past. The team's doing a great job rolling out our IV bags and whatnot, and you can feel the energy and the enthusiasm as we continue to accelerate the business.
All right, thank you. If I may follow up, to get to that $200 million, are there any additional investments still necessary in terms of equipment, et cetera? And what would be like a reasonable time frame to get to the $200 million? And also from a, I would say, product innovation perspective, what can we still expect for the remainder of the year?
Yeah, Matthias, and you will answer now, but just for the benefit of that, Matthias, when we stated $200 million, is not a new guidance whatsoever, and when are we going to get there, right? So we were at 118 with this movement with the book of business of U.S. compounding. We feel comfortable with the 125. We are on track, and the $200 million is the capacity of the current facility, right? Just for... And if you want to add here something, Andy, what are the investments necessary?
Yeah, of course, we're always looking at different automation techniques and whatnot. Part of the facility is automated and whatnot. When we think about our new product development, we've traditionally played and service our customers with OR syringes. We strategically launched our IV bags in the first half of this year, which we have already seen a nice impact from, and so we will continue to see further developments and new product development efforts in that category. But when we look towards next year, we're really focused on being a one-stop shop, full-service provider for hospital outsourcing. And so we really need to be in four key categories. The first one, OR syringes, which is our historic business that we focused on. Our second, IV bags, which we launched in the first half of this year. And the second and third are epidurals and CAD cassettes, which you will see us roll out in the second half of this year and the first half of 2022. Those products all in combination give us significant confidence that leaves us enough headroom to be able to continue to grow, not only to the $124 million but beyond.
Yeah, and maybe, Andy, also we can explain to Matthias about the investments that for us, of course, quality was always the first driver for success in Wichita, right? Mm-hmm. So far we have done a good job there, but that we invest in service levels, right? That is very important for the industry, correct?
Yeah, so as I'm sure you could imagine the largest player in the market exiting at the beginning of 2020, the need is greater than ever for really strong, reliable hospital outsourcing partners. So from our standpoint, we have, over the last year, been very targeted in how we think about our growth and onboarding new customers, as well as the way in which we roll SKUs out so that we can ensure that we service our customers with very high service levels. Right now, we're more or less around 97%, which is, I believe, industry leading. And so that gives us quite a bit of confidence that the way in which we're doing it, adding on the second shift, that we can continue to accelerate our growth in the second half of the year and next year as well.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Clear.
Thank you, Matthias.
The next question is from Mr. Lenny van Steenhuizen, KBC Securities. Go ahead, please.
Hi, good morning. Was wondering also a bit on the U.S. operation, so some questions on that. Was wondering if you could elaborate a bit on the acquisition of U.S. compounding, how the product offering and customer base compare to the existing one of Fagron in the U.S. And then a second question on top of that, you mentioned the 400 new accounts being added. How do you feel in terms of overall market share in that compounding segment? How is that shifting in the U.S. through the lingering pandemic effects? How much do you feel of that could be sticky, or do you expect still some churn, let's say, of the overall market share? Thank you.
Yeah, so on the U.S. compounding book of business acquisition, it's more or less $6.5 million annualized with a product portfolio that is quite similar to our product portfolio. We do have the ability to add on a few new SKUs from this deal, albeit there will be a transition in order for that to take place. And so really what this deal gives us is it gives us access to new customers, and it gives us the ability to take customers that we share together and expand the share of the wallet with our launch of IV bags. So we're quite excited about that. For the first half of this year, we do expect a transition. With the quality standard CGMP CFR 210 and 211, it does take some time to transition these customers properly in order to have long-term relationships with them. So we expect some time there. But mostly this is an opportunity for us to further strengthen the relationship that we have with customers that we share and to gain new customers. As it relates to the 400 new accounts that we added on the first half of this year, we see a really great potential to grow with these accounts. It takes about 4 to 6 months on average to really fully onboard these accounts. So for the accounts that we landed at the beginning part of the year, January, February, March, you saw some of that revenue coming in the second quarter, which is why we were able to realize a run rate of roughly $70 million in June. For the folks that we added on towards the back half of the semester, we will see those customers come into fruition at the end of the third quarter, at the beginning of the fourth quarter. And so that in combination with being a more one-stop shop, we feel like that gives us a lot of stickiness. Our customers, once they make a transition because of the quality standards and because of the involvement, and as I'm sure you can imagine, the larger the hospital system, the more challenging it is to move their hospital hospital pharmacy operations to us. It requires high service levels, and when you have high service levels and you can provide one-stop shopping with a top-notch customer experience, they tend to stick with you. And so that gives us a lot of confidence that we won't have a very much customer churn if we do our job operationally to keep the service levels very high, which we're confident in.
All right, thanks. Thanks for that. And perhaps if I can squeeze in another last question also on the EBITDA margin guidance. Just a quick one. Does the guidance take into account or assume similar increased costs for the second half of this year, or is there already some alleviation expected in costs for the coming months?
Yeah, so maybe to answer that one, so for North America, we of course expect to see leverage based on the investment we now do on the 60 FTE and the sales increase. For Poland, we do expect that when the transfer is finalized somewhere in Q3 and early Q4, that those costs will run out of our P&L.
And how does that relate to the gross margin in terms of costs?
Yeah, so the $2 million we communicated earlier related to the transfer of Poland, that's a gross margin improvement, which we will see the full benefit of that in 2022.
Okay, thanks for that.
Thank you, Lenny.
The next question is from Mr. Stijn de Meester, ING. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for taking my questions. The first one is also on Wichita, I'm afraid. So basically, you are adding, you're expanding your workforce by 30% in Wichita on basically the same sales target. So can you help me understand what has changed, or how you will be able to recoup these added costs of this FTE increase on a sales number that is roughly the same as before, including the 6.5 million of acquired sales. So what has changed that you can pass on this higher FTE costs, given that your margin target of 20% is basically unchanged? That's my first question.
You know, as it relates to the 60 FTEs, it was certainly something we needed to go from the 3.2 million to the 5.8 million. And so part of it is to be able to keep our high service levels for the business that we've already added on. But part of the benefit of the way that you land these contracts, so we saw the 400 new accounts in the first half of the year, as well as the acquisition of USC's 6.5 million, more or less, of business. We felt that it was imperative to prepare for the future. As I'm sure you could imagine, in a CGMP facility with top quality, you can't make decisions overnight. And so in order to be able to grow really efficiently and swiftly in the second half of this year, we felt that the 60 new FTEs were needed in order to put that infrastructure in place. When you add on the second shift, as you think about our first shift and what we were able to realize, when you look at the second shift, I would expect that that what we've added remains somewhat fixed, because you will get leverage there, and you do get synergies when you're adding these shifts and when you look at our manufacturing process. So I would expect that the new 60 FTEs will give us sufficient room in order to be able to grow and realize the operational leverage.
Sure, I appreciate that. But where do you aim to recover those costs of this workforce increase if there is not another change in the market as to pricing, for example?
Well, maybe Stein, if I may comment on this one. What we see is that, again, what we said this morning when we spoke, that the service levels of 97-99% that we are now serving to the market are very important, right? So we expect with the new onboarding customers that we see and that we also have in the pipeline that the ramp-up will occur, that we are on track with monthly sales of 5.5, 5.8, as you indicated now, Andy. And then you have your fixed cost, right, of the facility, and then you have your variable cost with the adding the workforce, as you indicated. So this will be like that, like a wave that we will see when we get to the next monthly achievement of 6.5 million dollar, we will go through the P&L into the bottom line. If I may clarify on this one.
Yeah, and maybe to add, Stein, as the volumes increase, our batches are also increasing. So we get more efficient on that. We see volumes already increasing because we're landing more customers, similar product portfolio, so we get more efficient. Of course, we still invest in automation. That also takes time and people to validate those processes, but that will also increase our efficiency, and therefore we are confident that we will get to the 20% on that part.
Yeah, if I may rephrase, it was the hiring of these people planned in the original roadmap, or are you trading off automation investments, which are slow, by adding FTEs, a manual workforce, and then maybe
I would say certainly it was planned. I think I don't want to say underestimated, but what we certainly enjoyed in the first half of the year is the onboarding of these 400 new accounts. And so from our standpoint, we don't want to miss an opportunity to service the customer at a high service level. And so that is what really contributes to the stickiness factor and prevents the churn. And so we really see that as a short-term investment that impacts profitability, but we will get a long-term benefit out of this because we'll have a much better relationship with our customers. And in turn, as we continue to accelerate our new product development efforts, it'll be easy to add those new SKUs to those accounts.
Yeah, maybe Stein, if I understand, if we understand correctly what you say, maybe we anticipated this second shift because also we foresee with the pipeline that we have in IDNs and GPOs, of course, you need the onboarding time. So what we anticipate, we want to be ready again to fulfill the needs of our customers, and we don't want to disappoint any new customer that we foresee that is going to come into our customer portfolio. So therefore, we took this initiative, and it's very much aligned with our plan of now 125, right?
Okay, helpful. Another question on Wichita.
Thank you.
It's very helpful to have the June run rate of 70 million, but can you disclose the run rate in Wichita over April and May, as looking over 1 month period might cause some distortion in the numbers? So on my calculations, the Q2 run rate is still below 60 million. So can you confirm that April and May was significantly weaker than June?
Yeah, so here, Stein, again, what we also said in other calls, we monitor it on a monthly basis with monthly developments, right, and also onboarding of new customers. Here we also need to take into account one element that is what we explain in other calls. We have in Wichita two businesses. We have the ASC, Ambulatory Service Centers, with the elective care, and we have the hospital business. That's where we really invested in order to get to the 125, I look at you, Andy, run rate. So we see that also due to the measures relating COVID, these clinics reopen, and therefore we see this acceleration in the month of June. Right? Andy, if you want to comment, give an extra here.
Yeah. I mean, certainly, Stein, it is fluid. And so when you look at the results in the second quarter, of course, they are back-end weighted. But that can be attributed to the onboarding of these new accounts. So as we onboard accounts or as we close new deals in January and February, those deals materialize in April and May. As we close deals in March and April, those deals materialize in June, July, August. And so we do see, when we look at month-over-month development and whatnot, we do see those customers materializing, and that's why we're confident in the guidance of the run rate of 70 million. Of course, it is fluid. When customers onboard their business to us, we usually start because we do supply chain fills and whatnot, and then we get to a more balanced level. And so that's just something that we constantly monitor and work through with the customers. But the underlying business is there, and that's why we are confident on the run rate. And then, of course, we see in the second quarter, two of the major states in the U.S., population centers, California and New York, having reopening. And so we see a comeback to pre-pandemic levels in our elective care business. And so that, in combination with our accelerated growth and our new product development pipeline, that's what gives us assurances that we're moving in the right direction towards the target that we stated for next year.
Okay, understood. My final question is on EMEA. Looking at the margin evolution, second half last year to first half this year, you don't seem to have the same cost headwind or the same inability to pass through higher raw materials, packaging costs, etc., in Latin America versus Europe. But I would expect that the sort of pricing trend in LATAM is the same versus Europe. So what explains this big discrepancy between able to pass through these higher costs in your core region, Europe, versus LATAM?
Yeah, sure. So we need to see also how the market is set up, Stein. We see in Europe is more static in terms of reimbursement, instead in terms of product portfolio with somehow fixed price, with somehow a fixed contract that, of course, we are reworking diligently in order to see an improvement there. That's on the European side with this more staticness on the front part. When we go to Latin America, and this we explained several times, that's more dynamic, so the prices are being updated on a daily basis, even on an hourly basis, depending on your inventory position. Therefore, we also took this movement in the inventory levels in our Latin America region in order to to continue the gaining of the market share, that we are successfully doing that. And there we are more able to pass these price increases rapidly to this cash market, because it's a more cash market and has this dynamic. And that's the main region, the main difference between those two regions.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for answering my questions. That's it from me.
Thank you very much, Stijn.
The next question is from Mr. Eric Wilmer, ABN ODDO. Go ahead, please.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking my question. First question, during the Q1 call, I think you were rather optimistic about full year 2021 sales and profitability. Now the midpoint of your EBITDA guidance is lower than your 2020 EBITDA. While at Q1, you should have had some visibility into April. Assuming that you already had visibility into higher COGS in your Polish transfer and U.S. growth plans, including that second shift, I was wondering what has happened that made you much less optimistic. That would be my first question.
Sure, Eric, and it's a very much valid question, of course. And we are navigating during these COVID times into somehow uncertainty. What our plans, what we foresee at that time in April, we thought or we saw that the recuperation of the elective care, especially in the MEA region, would be rather sooner than what was the real case. So we saw an acceleration in number of scripts at the end of Q2, so the last weeks of June, and we expected that this would have happened before, right? And therefore you see as well the compounding services getting some better traction. So that was the delay that we saw in these uncertain moments, right? So that was the main reason for this delay.
All right, okay, understood. And there may be a few questions on the U.S. Acquisition. When exactly will it be closed? And could you disclose also some details on the price tag? And then why did Adamis Pharmaceutical sell division? Is it because they only want to focus on, for example, 503A? And finally, do you see more opportunities for such acquisitions in the foreseeable future?
Yeah, maybe to start, Eric. So we closed it. As Andy mentioned, it will take a couple of months or weeks to onboard new customers, depending on the size and the type of the customers. So we expect sales later on in this year. Annualized, it's $6.5 million. If you look at the acquisition price, it depends on the sales we are doing. So it's kind of a book of business we buy, and it can vary between 1 and 2 times sales, depending on the type of products, so the margin profile of that products. And maybe if there's other assets in the market, then we'll maybe give the word to Andy to.
Yeah, from an acquisition outlook, we are looking at deals in the U.S., primarily in our brands and essentials business and our 503B hospital outsourcing business, that we feel could help accelerate our organic growth plan or add more value to customers and add value to shareholders. And so as of now, anything really in those two buckets is on the table. Of course, we will continue to maintain a very disciplined approach towards M&A in the U.S. And in other regions. And so for that, we are looking. But at this time, nothing to comment on.
Yeah.
Very clear. Thanks. Just for modeling purposes, you're talking likely around 2 million sales then for this year from the new acquisition.
Yeah, as mentioned before, that's a bit difficult. So it depends on the onboarding of these customers. So we expect some in the last quarter.
Okay, understood. Thanks.
The next question is from Mr. Begin Christophe. Kempen, go ahead, please.
Yes, hello, good morning, everyone. I have a straight question. Can you please quantify, if possible, firstly, the impact of being operating the Dutch and the Poland packaging facility at the same time in H2?
So as mentioned earlier, so the impact indeed is on the OPEX side, and As we said earlier, this is the level of detail we want to give on that.
Okay. And then I'm aware, of course, it depends on the region, division, but typically, on average, what is the lead time it takes to transfer increasing pricing, typically? I know it's a different situation because raw material prices have been soaring more strongly than normally, but what is the typical lead time in transferring increasing in pricing?
Yes, good morning. That differs a lot, as you said, depending on the region, right? So Latin America, and you see it back, of course, with the figures, we are able to do it extremely fast, very agile. It's a very dynamic market. In the U.S., somehow lesser, though there you have a cash-based market in the brands and essentials part, where we acquire the raw materials for that. And it's somehow more dynamic, not as dynamic as in Latin America. And in Europe, it's more static, right? It takes some time, therefore we say towards the second semester, we're able to renegotiate some contracts to see how we can pass through those price increases. But also, as we stated in the press release, right, we are also working diligently in order to minimize this impact again.
Yeah. Okay. So let's say for the EU, 3 to 6 months.
Well, we work diligently in order to recuperate those margins. Right. Regarding timing, goes more to the end of the second semester rather than at the beginning.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. And then second question is on Wichita. I noticed that in Q2 you have been. Yeah, you initiated 3 SKUs, if I'm right. Can you maybe provide some qualitative explanation to that, given the number of SKUs went down? Is that slowing down, or are these high volume, high qualitative SKUs, or can you guide me there through, please?
Yeah, so the majority of our focus on new product launches in the first half of this year has been heavily weighted towards the IV bags. And that's where we feel at this time is the most significant opportunity in the marketplace. And so we've chosen to spend a lot of efforts in Q4 of last year to get the bags in a place where we can roll them out successfully, where we can maintain high service levels at launch. And so that's maybe why you see a little bit slower or a little deceleration in the launches in the second quarter. Versus the first quarter and prior quarters, because we really wanted to give emphasis on this very important category. But as we continue to move through this year and next year, what you'll see is some continued launches in IV bags, and we'll continue to invest in that category. But then we'll also invest in epidurals and cassettes. This gives us a much more well-rounded offering and allows us to be more or less a one-stop shop for our customers, which for them adds a lot of value in being able to be a more complete hospital outsourcing partner, pharmacy outsourcing partner for them. Does that answer your question?
Yes. And follow up, the reason why you focused on IV bags, let's say primarily in the last 6 months, is that because you should increase the upsell or cross-sell potential you currently see, or is it a temporarily trend you quickly wanted to anticipate, or is it important to increase customer acquisition? What is explaining this typically choice?
Yeah, well, the need in the market is certainly the greatest because the IV bags are the most challenging to fill. So if you could imagine a hospital pharmacy setting, filling a 5 ml OR syringe isn't challenging or isn't as challenging for a hospital pharmacy to run through their operations. When you start getting into larger IV bags, the process becomes much more cumbersome. And so from our standpoint, we felt like that added the most value to customers and allowed us the ability to take the work we've done and the customers that we've built in our OR syringe portfolio and expand the share of the wallet. And so from that standpoint, that gives us a lot of confidence that as we get into new categories like epidurals and cassettes, that we will be able to efficiently and effectively add those new products onto these customers. So the need in the market's there, we feel it, and that's why we've chosen to focus on it.
Okay, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there are any additional questions, please press star one. And the next question is from Mr. Maarten Verbeek, The Idea. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, it's Maarten of The Idea. A couple of questions from my side. First of all, you mentioned that you want to have a higher strategic level or more inventory. Could you more or less indicate how much more basis points as a percentage of revenue you are thinking of? Secondly, you had non-recurring cost of 0.7 million. Could you break that down into the restructuring cost you mentioned and the release of the contingent liability of an acquisition you made in the past? And lastly, in Q1, the revenues in AMR declined by some 10%, and then more or less you stated that you were impacted by the number of prescriptions, which declined by some 12.5%. In Q2, the decline is more or less the same, again, some 10% decline. But in Q2, there was an increase in the number of prescriptions of plus 15%. So I'm a bit puzzled here. Could you give some more color on those developments?
Yeah, maybe first to start with the question on working capital. So indeed, working capital increased that to 12% of sales compared to 10.8% last year. And that's mainly because of the increased inventory levels combined with some higher receivables. So the increase in stock is mainly because of the increase in inventory levels in Brazil and EMEA. And as mentioned, we decided to increase those levels to ensure product availability. Currently, we see the challenges in the supply chain because of COVID. So we also increased some volumes because of higher transportation costs, and we anticipated some price increases for our products. On the longer term, however, we expect to get back to around 10% of sales for working capital. So we do see this as a temporary build out of our inventories, and we are sure that we get back to that 10% level as the situation regarding COVID normalized again. Same for the receivable, that's a temporary thing, and we see that we can bring that back to normal levels again. So that's on the working capital, maybe on the non-recurring. So the release of the contingent liability in the LATAM is around 2 million, and the rest is related to reorganization costs.
Yes, and on your question, Maarten, on the number of scripts that we saw, you said it correctly. At the first quarter, we saw a sales development in EMEA of minus 10.6, and in the second quarter of minus 9.4, so an improvement of 1.2. When we look at 2020, when we look back at 2020, in the first quarter, we had 2 months and 2 weeks of normal course of business, right? And then the last 2 weeks of March, when the pandemic started, of course, the elective care decreased enormously, and we were able to compensate, or we were able to serve. We were very proud at that time, our customers with COVID-related items on the protection, on the prevention, on the treatment, right? So that was that one. The second quarter, of course, the dynamic state. So there was much, much lesser elective care, and we were able to continue serving the customers at that time. Remember that we explained some calls that some of the customers said that were very happy with us, that our trucks were going to their facilities or hospitals at that time to serve them with COVID-related items. So that's how we built the sales in different regions, but especially in the European region that you were referring to in 2020. When we go back to 2021, of course, we see an absence of those COVID-related items because the market normalized. There is another dynamic, that the decline on the elective care was there. And then what we explained during the previous calls is that out of 100 products that we serve to our customers, hospital pharmacies, community pharmacies, we normally see that it's 80%, it's a repetition script, and 20 is more the first script that is being generated. That is the graph that we always show in the presentation. So it's, you could see it like a funnel, right? That gets when the patient gets back and refills the prescription. So that has this delayed effect.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Martin.
The next question is from Mr. Stijn de Meester, ING. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you for taking my follow-up. It's on the receivable evolution, and can you sort of help me understand what drives this increase? And can you also disclose the evolution of the factoring versus the second half of last year?
Yeah, so we're around 28 million of factoring currently. So what we see is that we had some delayed collections of receivable in the EMEA region that has to do with some implementations we had on ERP systems while we postponed a little bit the collection with a week, so that fell in that period. So therefore, we are confident that this is a level that is temporary. There's the quality of the receivables, the aging is not a problem. So therefore, we see that this is a temporary impact and we can get back to normal levels, and the working capital on average on the longer term will go back to the 10%.
Yeah. Has there been a lot of pre-ordering of clients facing those shortages that they perhaps try to secure 3Q orders already? Has that increased?
This effect and makes sense what you are saying, Stijn. But in the market dynamic, we have not really seen that.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there are any additional questions, please press star one. There are no further questions at the moment.
So thank you very much, operator, and of course, thank you very much all for your questions and for having attended the call today. Thank you. Have a nice rest of the day.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the event call. Thank you for attending. You may now disconnect your line. Have a nice day.